Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features a contribution from Chico Soul and the Sacramento Observer. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Butte County Board of Supervisors meeting by Hope Brianna Campbell, a segment on the Chico Unified School District by Maddie Vannucci, a piece on Juneteenth by Hope Brianna Campbell, and a story on Stream Charter School by Maddie Vannucci.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. At the Board of Supervisors meeting, supervisors approved a resolution that allows the county to apply for additional community development block grant disaster recovery funding, commonly known as CDBG/DR funds. This resolution brings more outside money into Butte County to help rebuild infrastructure in areas affected by the Camp Fire. County staff told supervisors that these disaster recovery funds could help support projects that improve roads, drainage systems, public facilities, and other essential infrastructure needed to serve residents now and into the future. The funding comes from federal disaster recovery programs and is administered through the state. At the Board of Supervisors meeting, Katie Simmons states that,
at the direction of this board, county staff are implementing a number of projects using CDBG disaster recovery funding as a result of the Camp Fire. In 2025, the California Department of Housing and Community Development requested the county identify unmet needs within existing infrastructure projects that may qualify for additional funding. On December 16th, 2025, the board directed staff to request from HCD $15,858,654 in additional CDBG disaster recovery funds, $9,498,750 of which was prioritized for the county's consolidated behavioral health facilities and the Lake Ridge Circle Road Rehabilitation Project. The board directed the balance of any additional funds go toward the Sewerage Commission of Oroville's wastewater treatment plant upgrade, already receiving approximately $10.3 million from the county in CDBG disaster recovery funds. On May 26, 2026, HCD awarded the county $10 million in additional CDBG DR funds. Staff recommend the board adopt a resolution accepting the additional funds, allocating $9,498,750 for county facilities and roads, and $501,250 for the SCORE project, and authorize the chair to sign. General Services is requesting any additional funds for facilities be directed toward the Consolidated Behavioral Health Facility in Oroville.
For residents who lived through the Camp Fire, county leaders say each grant application, infrastructure project, and funding opportunity represents another step forward. Butte County continues to look for ways to bring resources home and keep rebuilding efforts moving ahead. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News. A former Inspire High School student urged Chico Unified School District leaders to create an internship opportunity for adults with disabilities during public comment at the board's June meeting. Chelsea Chambers, who holds certificates in early childhood education and special education, said that individuals with disabilities bring unique insights and experiences that can benefit students with special needs. Chambers argued that people with disabilities are often uniquely qualified to support students facing similar challenges. No one understands what it's like to have a disability like another person with a disability, Chambers told the board. She proposed that the district explore internship programs that would provide training, job coaching, and workplace experience for adults with disabilities seeking careers in education. Chambers said that such programs could help build a more inclusive workforce while creating additional support for students. The request comes as school districts across California continue efforts to expand workforce diversity and improve services for students with disabilities. The discussion of disability inclusion was one of several conversations centered on student support and access. Throughout the meeting, district leaders highlighted ongoing efforts to strengthen services, improve campus facilities, and expand opportunities for students across Chico Unified. Later in the meeting, board members raised concerns about long-term facility planning for the district's access program, which serves students with intensive support needs, and discussed the lack of dedicated district funding for elementary school library collections. The board also received an update on the district's Community Schools Partnership Program, which supports 8 campuses through expanded mental health services, family engagement efforts, and academic intervention programs. District leaders said that the program aims to improve attendance, reduce disciplinary incidents, and connect families with community resources. Meanwhile, facility officials outlined a busy summer construction schedule that includes classroom additions, restroom renovations, and playground upgrades across multiple campuses. Major modernization projects are underway at several elementary schools as the district prepares for continued growth in transitional kindergarten enrollment. While much of the meeting focused on long-term investments in student services and campus infrastructure, district leaders also took time to celebrate one of the year's biggest successes, the inaugural Chico Unified Creativity Expo. What began as an experiment in student engagement turned into one of Chico Unified's largest community events of the year. District educators reported that the inaugural Chico Unified Creativity Expo attracted thousands of visitors and featured work from roughly 5,500 students across the district. Organizers estimated that nearly 7,000 student projects were displayed during the multi-week event. The expo was designed as a replacement for the traditional art fair model, emphasizing participation over competition. Rather than selecting winners, organizers invited students from elementary, middle, and high schools to showcase creative work in a shared community space. The event also featured student performances, interactive activities, and volunteer support from dozens of students and staff members. "We had people coming up to us saying, 'Are you going to do this again?'" educator Lauren Green told the board. District officials described attendance as far exceeding expectations and said that the event could eventually expand beyond visual arts to include science, engineering, culinary arts, and other academic disciplines. The success of the expo reflects a growing emphasis on student-centered programming that celebrates participation and creativity rather than competition. With Zephyr News, this has been Maddie Vannucci.
This is Patrice for Chico Soul. This week, a fatal shooting at the Chico Library, which police say was perpetrated by a Columbine copycat, leaves Chico residents in shock. Also, the backstory on how Chris Hutton reported on former Assemblyman James Gallagher's bill that would void referendums that block housing projects like Valley's Edge. First, Butte County public libraries are temporarily closed in the wake of a Monday afternoon shooting incident at the Chico Library. Meanwhile, an 18-year-old suspect who allegedly killed 2 adults and injured a child was scheduled to have been arraigned in Butte County Superior Court Tuesday afternoon. The suspect, Bradley Scott Sayer, was allegedly inspired by the deadly 1999 shooting at Colorado's Columbine High School, according to Butte County District Attorney Michael Ramsey. Speaking at a press conference Tuesday, the district attorney said that Sayer allegedly made a, quote, deep dive, unquote, on social media into the Columbine shooting. Ramsey also noted that the words natural selection on the suspect's t-shirt was a reference to one of the Columbine High School gunmen. Shocked Chico residents held a vigil on Tuesday. Some of them spoke to Chico Soul reporter Yu Chung Tang prior to that event.
I've lived here 46 years. I watched this library being built at the time it was built, and I've watched people come and go out of here all over the years, and people drive by that I know. It's a great place to live, and now all of a sudden you have this kind of a tragedy that's so unexpected, and so it's hard to explain, but you just don't want to have any problems like that in your neighborhood. Nobody does. Nobody does.
Shortly after 5 p.m. Monday, police arrested the suspect, a recent Chico High graduate, as he fled out the back of the library once they arrived on the scene. They said they recovered the shotgun used in the shooting and found other weapons in the suspect's car. Police Chief Billy Aldridge said Sayer was in custody within minutes of the first 911 call. That quick response was something local resident Leighton Leathers said he appreciated.
Leathers, and I was here at the shooting, and I feel sad for the victims. And I have some of the kids that we've seen that survived. There's a lot of scared kids out there, but also thankful that I'm still here, and thankful for the police for the quick response and what they did, because without them, there would have been probably a lot more people. They were quick. I thought they were really quick, so I was thankful for that. And I'm just, hopeful for the future. Maybe they can maybe get security for the library now.
Ramsey said that Sayer may be charged with two counts of first-degree murder and possibly additional charges of attempted murder. The victims of the shooting incident are Robert Johnson, 74, of Orland, who was declared dead at the scene, and Jacob Hull, 46, of Chico, who succumbed to his wounds once taken to Enloe Hospital. A young girl, whose injuries may have been caused by broken glass, was treated and released at Enloe. All of the libraries will be closed temporarily while security measures are taken. The Chico branch, where the incident took place, won't reopen until after August, due to needed renovations caused by the incident. Butte County Director of Libraries Misty Wright said she doesn't expect further issues at the other branches, but she said staff will remain vigilant. In other news from Chico Soul, we take a look at how reporters work. We'll hear from freelancer Chris Hutton, who tells us how he combed government websites and found sources to tell the story of Assembly Bill 2676, a move by then Assemblyman James Gallagher that could overturn a 2024 citizen referendum blocking Valley's Edge, a controversial housing development on the outskirts of Chico.
So after speaking with my source and getting the documents that they were able to give me, I then tried to find anything that was available online about it. CalMatters tracks each bill, so I was able to see the history. And then there's also a few websites through the state government that also track it. So I was able to watch each committee hearing that the bill was at when it was on the assembly floor. And so I was just kind of piecing together the puzzle of what was available online. There was no other reporting on this bill. So after digging through the bill myself, I then had to kind of understand what it meant to people in Chico. So
Hutton was 4 days into his reporting when another newspaper published a letter to the editor about the bill and its ramifications. He feared he might be scooped, and he intensified his efforts to flush out the story.
Reported on it. So I just began combing through documents in relation to Valley's Edge and reaching out to people by email, phone, and just talking to as many people as possible to understand better what Valley's Edge meant to them, what the history of the referendum was, and then also what it would mean for this bill to pass and the referendums to potentially be nullified. So that was a lot of the project. And then because I wasn't super familiar with the topic to really report on as much as I wanted to, I went back and watched all the city council meetings, all the community meetings, and read actually the whole 719-page environmental impact report. So I did a lot of research to just fully understand the project itself. And the bill, just looking at what language would affect Valley's Edge. The hardest component was actually tracking down what other issues could have used the retroactive component of the bill. So this would have been anything in pending litigation over a referendum blocking a housing development can use the retroactive component of the bill. I couldn't find anything. I went through each of the measures that CalMatters tracked. I went through numerous news articles. I just tried to find anything that would point me in the right direction. I reached out to Representative Gallagher, who just didn't get back to me. I asked the lawyers who are for Believe in Chico LLC. He said that he wasn't aware of anything, but he also hasn't looked. So I didn't include that in the article, but I tried really hard to find any other pending lawsuit that could use the retroactive component, and all I could find was Valley's Edge.
Check out the infographics Hutton created for Chico Soul's story published June 18th, and the many reader comments on our Facebook page. This has been Patrice for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org. At chicosoul.org, you can also subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, The Little Sun, to get notified about new content and hear directly from our writers. That's chicosoul.org.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. Chico residents gathered this week to celebrate Juneteenth, with an event centered on music, food, family, and community. Held at DeGarmo Park, the annual Juneteenth celebration brought together people of all ages for an afternoon of live entertainment, local vendors, cultural exhibits, and activities for children. Families spread out across the park, enjoying food from local vendors while listening to music and connecting with friends and neighbors. Juneteenth marks June 19, 1865, the day enslaved people in Texas learned they were free. More than 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation had been issued, today the holiday is recognized across the country as a celebration of freedom and an opportunity to reflect on the nation's history. In the Chico Enterprise Record, published by Nathan Chio Chios, it states in there that Juneteenth serves as an opportunity to reflect, learn, and celebrate freedom, resilience, and progress, Archie said. So there are a lot of different ways to honor Juneteenth, including attending community events like the one that they were hosting, supporting Black-owned businesses, which were really encouraging that day, and then also learning some African-American history and engaging in meaningful conversations about justice and equity. It also states in the Chico Enterprise Record that Maria Ross Walcott, who works with the NorCal Anti-Racism Coalition, said the community wants to come together, which is why events like Fridays are important. She states in quote, "What our community needs right now, a lot of what we need is just coming together, you know, getting to know each other better, and identifying what the issues are that we need to address. This is also where we can be more relaxed, hang out, and get to know people." Event organizers with BLACC, building leaders, advocates, and community connections, said the celebration was created to provide a space where people of all backgrounds can learn about Black history, honor the contributions of African Americans, and enjoy a sense of belonging. The gathering featured dozens of vendors, educational exhibits, performances, and opportunities for families to engage with local organizations serving the community. Organizers said creating a space where everyone feels included and connected remains one of the celebration's most important goals. The event highlighted not only the significance of Juneteenth, but also the importance of community, understanding, and shared experiences. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
Thank you. Teen conquers homelessness and hardship on path to GED. Hey, it's Faye from Game Amp Play for Zephyr News. This article is brought to you by the Sacramento Observer and published on June 2nd, 2026, and written by Taylor Johnson. When COVID-19 pandemic hit and schools shifted from in-person learning to laptops and virtual meetings, many students struggled. For Darius Washington, the crisis collided with a family medical emergency and a sudden slide into homelessness, derailing his education before high school. Now 19, Washington is on the brink of graduating from Elk Grove Adult and Community Education with a GED, determined to turn years of instability into a pathway towards a trade career and long-term stability. Quote, the only reason you wouldn't want to take the GED is just fear and being scared of not passing. You might as well just do it because even if you don't pass, you could always try again. End quote from Washington. Washington was 14 during the height of the pandemic, when instruction had already moved online. Around that time, his father suffered a serious medical emergency. Blood clots in his brain caused multiple strokes. Washington also says, quote, after he went to the hospital, he wasn't able to come back home. His mind was all messed up. He wasn't the same person, end quote. School slid into the background as survival took priority. About 2.6% of Elk Grove Unified School District students experienced homelessness during the 2024 to 2025 school year. According to Schoolhouse Connection, students experiencing homelessness are chronically absent from school at rates at least twice those of overall student population and significantly more often than their housed low-income peers. About 9 months ago, things began to change. Washington's aunt and uncle invited him to move in with them on the condition that he either get a job or return to school. Quote, they already told me you can't just be here and not do anything. I moved in with them to pursue something better in life and to not be stagnant and stuck in place or still be homeless or anything, end quote. With their support and encouragement from other family members, he enrolled at Elk Grove Adult and Community Education, where staff walked him through options for getting back on track academically. Because he hadn't attended high school, staff told Washington it could take years to earn a traditional diploma. Transitioning from an online-only learning experience during the pandemic to a physical classroom was an adjustment, but one he welcomed. Quote, it's been great. It was tiring at first, but it's been great, end quote. As a visual learner, Washington said in-person instruction made a significant difference. He says, quote, you can tell me how to do something, and I'm going to be very confused, but if you show me, and I can ask questions on the spot, then it's a lot easier for me to understand, end quote. One of his fondest memories of the program is Youth Day, when the school orders pizza and invites students to chat and connect. Those conversations helped him see himself as a young adult planning for the future. He said the school provides academic, financial, and logistical support for students. The program offers job support and placement assistance through partnerships that can connect students to employment opportunities in schools. The school also offers transportation assistance, including gas money and bus passes for those who need help getting to class or work. Students can also earn incentives such as gift cards for continuing their studies and passing exams. As graduation draws near, Washington has one final hurdle before earning his GED, the math test. He has taken the exam twice and missed passing by only a few points each time. Quote, at first I was depressed and discouraged, but now I just need to lock in and study. I'm still a little anxious about it, but I know I'm going to pass. All I need to do is really study, end quote. Once he earns his GED, Washington plans to continue working, save money, buy a car, and build a financial cushion. After becoming more financially stable, he hopes to attend trade school and pursue a career in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. Quote, because I go to church, I have a lot of opportunities to learn a trade with people who could train me and pay me at the same time. But the thing they told me is that I need to have my diploma or GED, end quote. He hopes more people consider adult education programs as a pathway to earning a high school equivalency diploma. Quote, there's no point in being hesitant, especially if you can find a community. People are going to support you and help you. It's not as hard as it seems, end quote. Every school district offers free adult education programs to help people complete their GEDs. This was Faye from Game Amp Play for Zephyr News. You can find this article on the Sacramento Observer.
This is Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News. Orville Stream Charter School may lose its charter, according to an Enterprise Record article by Nathan Chiachos. the Oroville City Elementary School District issued a notice of violation to Stream Charter School, beginning a formal process that could ultimately lead to the charter revocation if the school fails to correct identified problems. The district has given Stream until July 15th to submit a response and demonstrate corrective actions. The district found that Stream failed to properly post board meeting agendas in a publicly accessible location at least 72 hours before the meetings, as required by California's Brown Act. Agendas were reportedly posted online, kept in a closed office binder, or emailed to staff rather than being made available to the public. The school also allegedly changed the date of a June 2025 board meeting without properly notifying the public. According to Kia Shows, Stream is currently in a remedy period that will end on July 15th. During this period, school leadership must provide a written response addressing each alleged violation, outlining steps to correct them. If district officials determine the issues have not been adequately resolved, the next step could be a notice of intent to revoke Stream's charter. The notice stems from an independent investigation commissioned by the district after complaints were made against Stream administration. The district retained attorney Ryan Tung of Lincoln White Investigations to conduct what officials described as a neutral and impartial review. Investigators interviewed current and former employees and reviewed complaints and attendance records over several months. One of the most serious allegations involves claims that Stream maintained a discriminatory and hostile work environment. Several witnesses have come forward alleging that Stream co-director Devin Thomas frequently made comments that constituted gender-based discrimination and created a hostile work environment, according to the district's notice. Examples cited in the report include frequent references to employees' estrogen levels, referring to women as emotional, calling female office staff the beauty parlor, making comments about employees' appearances, making derogatory remarks about a non-binary student, and asking invasive questions about the female employees' personal lives. The district also alleges that retaliation occurred against employees who raised concerns or engaged in protected activities. According to the notice, some employees reported being threatened with termination or being treated differently after speaking out. One former female employee shared a statement saying, "It kills me that I have to stay anonymous for my own safety when I say this. The public is focusing so much on if Stream will close and how some previous staff members allegedly behaved, but they fail to see the facts. Stream needs to be held accountable so that harassment and retaliation don't ever occur to their future educators. The victims don't seem to be asking for the school to close at all. They want accountability from admin and the Stream board. I truly ask the public to ponder this. Why would any victim of this situation feel safe enough to come forward when the whole public seems to, quote, know the story already, and when everyone is so quick to back up Stream?" The notice also states that no fewer than four individuals have filed claims against Stream with California's Civil Rights Department within the past year. Another major allegation involves transitional kindergarten staffing requirements. District officials claim Stream administrators discovered the school was not meeting state-mandated staffing ratios and then allegedly asked teachers to alter enrollment records to make it appear that the school was compliant. According to the investigation, two teachers refused to make those changes, and the allegations were corroborated by other staff members and attendance office personnel. Stream leadership has denied wrongdoing. During a recent board meeting, co-director Devin Thomas publicly disputed the allegations, calling them false accusations and misrepresentations of his character. Thomas said he had not been given a fair opportunity to respond and argued that the district had accepted only one side of the story, according to Enterprise Records. For now, the future of Stream Charter School remains uncertain. District officials say their goal is not to close the school, but to ensure compliance with the state law and protect employees and students. However, if the district determines that the violations are not properly addressed by the July deadline, the charter revocation process could move forward. This has been Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/